Listen for Insight, a podcast from Miami University's Lockheed Martin Leadership Institute dedicated to spreading ideas of creativity, innovation, and leadership. Welcome to Listen for Insight. I'm your host, Evan Lynch. We have for you Elise Foster, a leadership development coach and creator of EliseFoster.com, and her insights on team-based leadership and creativity. I send you now to our interviewer, David Turnick.
What do you think someone should do to increase their leadership aptitude to be an effective part of a creative environment?
I think there are a few things at the heart of becoming a more effective leader and encouraging innovation and creativity. And the first piece of it is maybe a mental shift in terms of the assumptions of what a leader's job is. I think many people assume that a leader's role is to have the answers, and our research showed us that it's quite the opposite. Yes, of course, a leader needs to have some vision and some idea of where we're going, but the more they can be thinking in terms of having the questions and not having the answers, the more productive and innovative an organization can be. And so after you reshift and reframe the assumptions about what the role of a leader is, then it's how do I take a step back and get a good picture of myself in action and have some degree of self-awareness. Some people call it emotional intelligence. I think at the base level, how do I not just know that I've annoyed somebody in a meeting? You know, I think the really interesting thing about all the leadership work that I do is when these leaders come in and they do a 360, they get their input from the people above them, the people below them, and the people at their level. When they read that 360, 9 times out of 10, it is not a surprise.
Do you have any examples where you've seen that really transform in a company or in a school or on a team?
One in particular is a retail company that we work with, and they kind of did some soul searching, if you will, to identify and look at within their social media marketing team, the people who send out the email. They said, the retail, they said, okay, well, when's it okay for us to experiment and make mistakes, and when's it absolutely 100% not okay? And this was a team that was struggling to come up with new, exciting ways to get customers to actually click through and buy something. And when it came down to it, and they did this experiment around where can we make mistakes and where can't we, they boiled it down to, and actually I'll first ask, so when you think about that, you think about a team that's doing marketing for an organization. How many ideas do you think would fall in that not okay to experiment space?
As a percentage, I'd say maybe half of them.
And that's probably where they started. And what it came down to at the end, and if you can picture post-it notes on a board, some in okay and some in not okay to fail, they ended up with one single post-it note in not okay to fail. And it was the month of December. So that's when we make the greatest revenue from online sales. All we run at that point are things that are tried and true. Now imagine what that does to the team the other 11 months of the year. I'd be spending that other 11 months of the year trying to figure out how do I make my crazy idea the next tried and true that we are using for sure in December.
Do you notice differences in the common pitfalls or the types of diminishers that you find in, you know, the business world versus in academia?
The biggest differences we probably saw were more in terms of language. For example, the word debate isn't a treasured word in business. It's an even less treasured word in education. People are put off by the idea of debating a topic, and so we found that it was more resonant with leaders to think about being a community builder versus a debate maker on that continuum of how we make decisions. What I probably see more frequently is in education, you have more leaders who tend to be the rescuer, the leader who wants to avert crisis. They don't want to see anyone fail. They want to see everyone succeed, and so they step in maybe a little bit too early or a little bit too often, as opposed to on the business side, the two that probably are more prevalent are the idea that a person who wants to throw out a few ideas to get their team thinking creatively, or the leader who referenced earlier, that leader who repeats things over and over again, that leader who's always on. So there are maybe some subtle differences, but I wouldn't say there are large scale differences between the types of organizations.
So if I'm the leader in a situation and my idea is to, you know, get the conversation of creativity kind of started, but I don't want to overpower, how have you seen people successfully start that conversation, whether it's at a meeting or on more of a one-on-one or individual team basis? Is there a pretty tried and true way of starting that?
On that, and first I'd love for you just to take a second to reflect on your own experiences. What has driven that for you when you've not been a leader?
I think it's important to begin by asking questions as opposed to making statements. It seems like if you kind of open it up at the beginning, then it sets the tone that this is collaborative and not just me talking.
Yes, you're spot on, and that's probably one of the biggest takeaways and experiences that we share with people who, you know, go through our workshops or do coaching with us, and it is, you know, the more the leader can shift from having the answers to having the questions, the more effective and productive the organization is going to be. And a big piece of that is, how do you structure the questions so that you get the greatest, you know, intelligence on the table? In other words, you know, we want thought-provoking questions as opposed to the very closed-ended yes-no kinds of questions. And there are tons of resources out there on how to do that. And we use a tool called the Question Value Ladder just to show people the difference from when you start at the bottom end of the closed-ended kind of one-word yes-no question and move all the way up to challenge questions. Those are the ones where the leader it has an assumption in mind that might be driving our decisions and is asking questions to challenge those core assumptions.
So I want to talk about the idea of immunity to change. I had a little bit of a harder time kind of grasping this one. Could you explain, you know, what that is and a little bit how you're involved with it?
I'm chuckling a little bit because I consider myself a bit of an immunity to change delinquent. The concept of immunity to change is this idea that as individuals, when we talk about wanting to get better at something, almost everybody has self-development, some improvement goal. You know, I want to be a better listener. I want to be more collaborative. You know, fill in the blank. I want to, lose weight. I want to be more fit and healthy. Everyone has something like that, and they know lots of ways to get better. If I want to be more fit and healthy, I go to the gym more, I eat less, et cetera, et cetera. And they might even be able to do that. Think about your New Year's resolutions or people you know that have made them. They might be able to do that for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, but then over time, they slip back into old patterns. Often people think this is just a case of willpower and, you know, I'm not strong enough to stick with it. And what immunity to change helps us to see is that, well, on the one hand, you're committed to being more fit and healthy. On the other hand, there are some internal competing commitments that get in your way, and it's how we make sense of the world. And so it's some assumptions that we might hold that keep us committed to, you know, maybe never looking like an idiot. Now, you can imagine if you are committed, and by the way, these are the commitments we don't say out loud, we don't tell people, and we probably don't know that we have them until we start to uncover the decision-making. If you are committed to being fit and healthy, and one of the things that you're not doing that gets in the way of that is going to the gym, if you're also committed to never looking like an idiot, well, I'm certainly never going to go to the gym and use that piece of equipment if I'm going to look like an idiot.
Right.
And so you've got one foot on the gas, one foot on the brake, and there's some underlying assumptions about, you know, this person is committed, as I'm committed to never looking like an idiot. Well, they have some assumption in their head. I assume if I look like an idiot, then this dire consequence is sure to happen. So if we can help people uncover that meaning-making and how they're making sense of the world and those core assumptions, then they actually have a shot at making sustainable change instead of going through the cycle that a dieter typically goes through where they lose the weight and then within a year they gain that weight plus 7% more. So the more people can make visible to themselves and actually be able to take hold of what's getting in their way and having that self-awareness, the more likely they are to be able to overcome it. So I'm Elise Foster, and I am a leadership and organization development consultant. You can find more information at elisefoster.com. And I want to thank you for listening to Insight.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Listen for Insight, a part of Miami Ideas. Tune in next time for more insights on creativity, innovation, and leadership. Siesta by Jazar is licensed under a attribution share alike.